Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Groeneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Lindsay Kaplan. Lindsay is a screenwriter turned organizational psychologist who helps companies like Coinbase, Shell, Airtable, and CrowdStrike influence at scale. As the founder of The Gathering Effect, she partners with HR, communications, and business leaders to design strategies and experiences that spark behavior change, create buy-in, and drive lasting engagement. In this conversation, Lindsay unpacks why so many well-intentioned gatherings, offsites, onboarding programs, town halls fall short, and how small, thoughtful shifts can make them meaningful. Drawing from her background in screenwriting and organizational psychology, she shares how to move people emotionally and behaviorally, not just inform them. Whether it's designing an offsite that feels worth the travel, building onboarding experiences that actually stick, or turning a one-way town hall into a two-way moment of connection, Lindsay offers practical frameworks and questions to guide the way. She emphasizes the importance of starting with a desired effect, not just content, and returning again and again to clarity of purpose, participant motivation, and emotional resonance. If you've ever left a team event wondering, what was the point of that? This episode offers a roadmap for doing better. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Groeneveld, and today I'm joined by Lindsay Kaplan. Lindsay is the founder and lead consultant at The Gathering Effect. And gathering just happens to be one of my favorite words this year. So I'm excited to dive into this conversation. Welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Thank you, Dane. Great to be here.
So we were having some fun pre-show just talking about your work, but maybe let's go back a little bit further and, you know, tell us the story about how you came to be doing all of this cool work.
Yeah, well, so I'll share what I do now and then how I got there. So yeah. I run a consulting company called The Gathering Effect. And what I do is help organizations create experiences and strategies that move people to act or care or do something differently. And usually that looks like the design or redesign of learning and leadership programs, all hands, offsites, onboardings, values activations. It's really, how do I move a whole group of people at once is my specialty. The reason that's my specialty is I have kind of an odd background of three different parts. I started my career actually as a screenwriter in Hollywood. I studied film in college and wanted to be a TV writer. And I moved to LA and did that for a little while until I frankly became a little disillusioned and very impatient and actually quite luckily and accidentally found my way into learning and development, where I realized it was more purposeful for me to develop people in real life than maybe just characters on a page, but a lot of those same lessons and muscles apply. So I spent many, many years in internal learning and development at big and small companies, a lot of tech companies. And then I also have a master's degree in organizational psychology. And so the work that I do blends those disciplines of entertainment, education, and business to think about how we can move a whole bunch of people emotionally and behaviorally in a way that really sticks inside companies.
That's super cool. And I'm glad you shared the screenwriter in Hollywood piece. I was just having a conversation this morning with a different guest, and we were talking about, how people show up in teams. And one of the interesting analogies he shared is that particularly as leaders, we have to remember that oftentimes we're just an extra in someone else's movie. Ooh. I thought that's so cool because we get so hung up in our own perspective of like what our character is or what our perception of someone else's character is in our movie. But actually, we're all in our own movie. So it was just captivating.
That's really good. I really like that. Yeah.
And you shared that, developing people, not characters. So tell me a little bit more about, you know, in your sort of learning and development phase, what you saw the similarities to be there?
Yeah, there's actually a lot. And sometimes when I say that was my old life, I get a lot of like, that's weird. But it actually is very transferable. So when we write screenplays and scripts, we're taught a lot about observing people, having empathy, thinking about what motivates our character, why would they make certain choices? Because in order to write for them, you have to understand them. And similarly, in my work where I design and create a lot of learning experiences, leadership experiences, et cetera, thinking about what do people care about? What do they want to learn? Why are they there? How do I get them from A to B? And so understanding motivation as one thing is really, really important. Also thinking about structure, thinking about, how to keep people's interest. There's a lot of lessons, and I'm very grateful for the past experience.
That's super cool. I heard the other day a guest share that in order for people to care what you know, they need to first know that you care. And that struck me because, like, when you're thinking about writing or structuring learning and development, showing that you actually care about their work and the problems they may be trying to navigate that this training may help them with, or the opportunities that they're chasing, I would imagine that comes heavily into the design.
Oh, yeah. What we're really after is building trust, so that people are paying attention to us and feel like, they want to listen to us or sort of have us lead them. And one of the simplest ways to do that is actually start your learning experience, let's say manager training program, and say, here's why we're teaching this. Here's why I'm interested in this topic. And now, hey, you employee, why are you here? What are you interested in? I mentioned motivation as being a really important lever to understanding people and change. And so the more we can ask and answer people's own motivation to show that we care, it really helps cement the learning and get people more interested and involved. So, yeah.
I really like that. It's amazing how often as leaders we can run headlong into a training and just be like, let's get started. But actually going around the room and asking why people are there, it kind of gets people talking. It creates some awareness across the team, I would imagine, too.
Yeah, I'll tell you the nerdy reason why this is, what I believe over many, many years of doing this, which is all of these programs, no matter what it is, we are trying to affect people in some way, to move them in some way, even if it's just to share information. It's really a change program, no matter what it is. And people don't change because of content. It is not content that makes that change. People change when they are affected by the content. And so all the things that we might talk about in this podcast are ways in which to share information that helps that connection and that affecting happen. And so it's a skill to learn how to do this.
Yes.
So, and it can be taught.
That's very cool. So as you think now about creating these events that can influence at scale, and you tie it back to the effect on the individuals, when you are trying to build something that may serve, hundreds of people, how do you get down to that individual level of connection to the effect?
Yeah, three ways. I'll try to give you quick answers here. The first way is to ask the right questions. And typically we start with the content that we want to share versus the effect that we want to have. And that is a no-no in my book. So, asking stakeholders, what do you need from the people you're trying to affect? What could be different, after this is over? How will you know? It's similar to how we write movies and TV shows. We start with the end in mind. What happens at the end of the movie? We need to know what happens at the end of this program. And when we ask these kinds of questions, we are surfacing outcome, not just topics. Mm-hmm. And outcome is what people want to know. They want to know what's going to be different, right? So we need to surface that. In terms of getting down to the individual needs, often I do a lot of focus groups. I do a lot of, let me pull some culture carriers together or some of a cross-functional group together, and let me test this and make sure I'm understanding this, because people are more affected by the content when they feel seen, right? Which is one way to do that.
Yeah.
And the last, there's many ways to do this, but a final way is to make sure we're building the program based off of stories and examples, or critical incidences is a fancy term, versus, again, just sort of like, here's 13 topics that we want. So when we hear stories, we can have a good marker of whether or not we're building the right kind of program.
That's neat. Yeah, I've had a number of guests on the show talking about stories and that more tangible emotional connection.
That's the whole ballgame. Yeah. Even if people don't want to say that, being emotionally involved or invested is what drives that sort of change or aha. People have to feel, they have to feel something. That's the whole goal, honestly.
Very cool. So post-COVID, have you seen much change in that landscape? Have there been certain things that people are gravitating towards in new ways or new tools and approaches?
It's interesting. I think you and I talked about this a little bit before we started recording. I do a lot of offsite design. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, during COVID, obviously there wasn't a lot of that happening. People couldn't travel. And now that maybe folks are hybrid or return to the office or more distributed, I think more and more managers and leaders are being tasked with creating offsites as a tool for change without or influence without really knowing how to do that. And that, I think, is a really, really big engagement driver or engagement killer that folks would be well served to learn how to do better. So I think that's one thing I see.
Let's talk about the engagement killer, because I'm intrigued by that, because I've seen it even in some of my own teams where we kind of rush to put an offsite together. And you're like, well, people need to come together. There's a few things we have to achieve. But how can that good intention put in the wrong hands or in hands that aren't equipped lead to damage?
Yeah, so let's think about what can drain engagement or morale or motivation. I think it's feeling like my time was wasted. You know, it's not productive. I'm having to fly across the country for something that could have been done over Zoom. Waste of time, waste of money, all those different things, right? And so what I tend to see in terms of practically in these offsites is it's a lot of come to this location, sit in a room, and watch everyone deliver presentations, right? Like it's not the best use of time, but we don't know any differently. And it's similar to sort of all the other things that we might be talking about here, all hands training programs, et cetera. It's just a skill of how to move a whole group of people at once. And so that's like the kitchen sink, where we just have a bunch of presentations and a bunch of topics. We try to accomplish a bunch at once. Or we think that if we fly people to Mexico and they have a fun party, that will be the thing that will get people really excited.
Either end of the spectrum.
Right. I sort of say it's like the kitchen sink or casual. And that's the two kind of styles I tend to see. And I think neither are the most effective for long-term investment and involvement, which is what I think we really want and need. So those are some of the things I see, especially if people are leaving, you know, their families at home. They want this to be worth it.
Yeah. I think that's a big one too. One thing I've noticed on my teams is people are less willing to travel now for business. Once upon a time, it was expected. Some people actually had a lot of fun with it, but I think a lot of my team members and team members on customer organizations is kind of sitting there saying, well, I've kind of liked my new routine. I like picking the kids up from school in the afternoon or coaching practice or walking the dog with my neighbor or whatever it is. So there's almost like a higher opportunity cost in the minds of employees when it comes to travel.
Exactly. Yes, you said it very well. There's a higher opportunity cost, more is at stake. And we're using this tool, I think, more frequently, which means we probably should get better at learning how to do it. So I think a big opportunity.
Let's say there's a listener to here today who's been one of those people that have been tasked with running an offsite, and it's coming up in 6 weeks. You know, the travel's booked, the venue's there, and the only thing that they can really manipulate right now is how they use the time. Mm-hmm. Are there a couple of like approaches, methods, frameworks that you like to go to that can, you know, help if they're in that bind?
Yeah, I wouldn't be a good consultant if I didn't share like three things. So three things I talk about a lot, which is, so let's say you're either tasked with leading the offsite, or maybe you're a chief of staff who's helping your principal design it, whatever that might be. The first thing to do, let's say you have one day for the offsite. and you don't exactly know what we're doing there, but we're going, is to ask, you know, the employees there, the leadership, certainly your principal, clear questions that get at the desired effect. So I think we may have touched on this already, but what do you want to be different by the end of this? If I look through a camera lens, what would I see people doing differently? Imagine it's a week later. How will we know if we succeeded? Can you still tell me a story about the before and after? You know, getting at these specifics versus what I tend to hear is I want more accountability and I want more trust. Okay, what do we then do? Well, we go to dinner. I mean, these words are not very descriptive and not very helpful, which is why speaking in stories or examples can be most helpful. So let's say we get clarity on one or two clear outcomes. I then go validate that with some of the people who are going to attend. The reason for that is then you can sort of gut check that this is correct, but also you've then got a couple of champions on your side who are there in their room already supportive of what you're doing. And it's a great way to pull people in. I would say, you know, everything you put in the agenda needs to be linked back to one of those outcomes, which is why clarifying your outcomes is so important. And when you share them in the offsite, telling people how what you're doing, whether it's a class on feedback or a guest speaker or a hackathon, relates back to one of those outcomes.
Yes.
And then finally, I think this is probably the most important tip, which I see getting skipped very frequently, which is to do what I call landing the plane, where, you know, there's certain rituals that you follow when you're on an airplane and the plane's getting ready to land. You put your seatbelt on, you put the tray table up and all that stuff. In an offsite, landing the plane means making sure that people are able to apply and retain and use everything that you just spent that day doing or talking about. So you maybe spend half an hour having a discussion around what did we learn? How might we apply this? What might get in the way? What comes next? That really helps cement the go forward plan and gives people, again, a role in that process. We either assume that that's going to happen without us, which it probably won't, or our agenda is too packed to think that we have time for that. And it's really important to clarify not just it, the content, but us, what we're going to do differently after this whole event is over. So those are a few things I'd share.
That's super neat. I really like that structure. Thank you, Lindsay. And if you, like me as a leader, have a sort of penchant for bringing a bit of fun to the day, where do you best insert that? You know, whether it's costumes or games or whatever else, like, do you see, you know, periodically that the fun fits better at a certain part of proceedings?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's like, oh, this is the perfect place for fun. I think it's good to be sprinkled throughout.
Yeah.
I would give a cautionary tale, which is that, and I'm sure that you won't do this, but to remember that folks are adults and that they like choice and they often don't want forced fun. And so if you want people to have a good time and dress up in costumes, A, give them a choice, but also model it. So I have a real aversion to feeling like it's recess. So it's a delicate balance, I would say.
It totally is. Yeah, I've got a few team members that are always like, uh-oh, Dane's going to come out with one of his fun icebreakers here, and that's the last thing we want to do to start the day.
Yeah, it's what I'd like to offer is small little changes that make our choices more effective, right? And so if you're going to start with an icebreaker, that's okay. Two things. One, if you've got more introverted team members, tell them what the icebreaker is going to be ahead of time so people have time to prepare. But two, tell people why you're doing what you're doing. So the reason we're doing this fun activity to start or this activity to start is, you know, for example, brainstorming is more effective when we've had a chance to get to know each other first. Or there's research that shows if we tell people the why of what we're doing, especially adults, they'll be more likely to engage versus feeling pushed to have to participate, which can be a turnoff for many people.
Totally. What do you find when, you know, people bring in sort of the Lego play or the, you know, build a clay model of your idea? Like, how does that land based on the different people that are in a room when you're running offsites?
I think having those kinds of tactile experiences is really important, especially if it's a brain heavy day. like a difficult, you know, decision, or having just something kinesthetic to play with or work with can be really useful. And to also describe why we are doing this. I think it doesn't matter what it is that you're bringing in.
Yeah.
Telling people why and how this connects to the objectives is the best thing that you can do.
I love that. That's super powerful. I'm glad we drew an extra line under that one. It is interesting as leaders that, and I've certainly fallen foul of this a lot, that we can choose our own preferences for
absolutely.
A large group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Which is a good thing to be aware of and to not do. So
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And when it comes to things like the after events, you know, people going to a bar for a happy hour, or, you know, people are out for dinner. Again, people, I think in particular post-COVID, are really weighing up not only that opportunity cost, but there isn't that same level, and even generationally, there isn't that same level of comfort or preference for an alcohol-fueled event, or, you know, loud music and that type of thing. Are you finding that there are better formats for teams to bring, you know, everyone together in a way that isn't brain heavy, that is a bit more social, but it still creates room for people's different styles and tastes?
You're not going to please everybody, I would say, right?
Yeah.
But offering choice within the experience, right? Or having a leader who models different choices. So oftentimes we can be swayed by what the leader is doing and thinking that we have to follow that, which can be challenging for folks, especially if you're new to the organization. I think those kinds of dinners and social experiences are really important, with the caveat, again, I feel like I'm giving a lot of caveats, that we can't assume connection will just happen because people go out to dinner. You know,
yeah.
I was out to dinner with some friends a couple of years ago, and I remember we were seated next to a table of, it looked like a company coming together to a team dinner. And I saw one person sitting by themselves and sort of in the corner and everybody else talking. And I was like, oh, well, we need to do more to ensure that everyone feels a part of it and connected. And we can't just put people at a dinner table and assume that's enough. So small, you know, maybe prompts on the table, or there's different ways to do that. But I think that the TLDR here is just being more thoughtful, right? A little bit more intentional, a little bit more aware of what we're doing and why.
Neat. I've seen some groups put together social events, and they have sort of either a red, amber, green, like bracelet approach, or they have something that says, you know, this is how I like to interact on the evening. So like, hey, I'm wearing this red bracelet because I don't love hugs and all of that. Do you see those types of prompts coming up when big events are happening and lots of people are getting together that aren't necessarily in that situation regularly?
I haven't seen that, although I like that idea. I think two things come to mind. One is, I do some work with companies to design, you know, large scale gatherings like conferences. There's a trend of having sort of little badges that people can pick up that sort of allow you to identify parts of yourself that you want to share with other people, like, you know, dog lover or left-handed or whatever those things are, which can give folks kind of an easy way to start a conversation versus the awkward, like, what do you do? And things that, you know, folks may not like, that small talk or whatever.
Yeah.
But underneath, I think everything that we're talking about here is the importance of setting norms or a social contract or expectations with the group. Like, you know, here's not just the time we're going to start and the time that we're going to end, but here, you know, here's how we're going to achieve these objectives here. All of that just helps people feel more psychologically safe. They can invest their time. They know how to participate, and it releases a lot of uncertainty, or removes a lot of uncertainty, so people, you know, aren't guessing, which is a kind thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. No, I like that. Very cool. Just shifting gears a little bit, you talked a lot about, we talked a bit about onboarding. So if you're starting to bring people into an organization with, whether it's a shared experience or greater awareness of maybe what that operating system is, how are you seeing that shape up in today's kind of remote work world with lots of AI tools and other things going around? Is onboarding going in a better direction, or is it becoming more sort of fragmented and confusing? What's your general read?
The first thing that comes to mind is there are so many tools that oftentimes one of the most important parts of onboarding is telling people the tools that you use and how to use each of them or when to use each of them. So that's a side point, but I see that a lot. I love working on onboarding projects, specifically, you know, ways to share information that isn't too overwhelming to people because it's already a very overwhelming time.
Yeah.
And to me, I think a successful onboarding is when someone ends it feeling like they made the right decision, which means it's ultimately an emotional decision, like everything else.
Yeah.
And so I like working with clients, not just on, you know, here's the content that we want to share, but here's how to elicit that feeling of engagement. The most common way I've seen is cohort style, where you either fly people in who start at the same time or a similar time, or, you know, a virtual cohort of your onboarding class. And I think that's really common and a great experience for folks. A quick thing I tend to see that I tell people to avoid is department overviews. So standard onboardings are like, you're going to hear from finance, you're going to hear from legal. It's like, that probably is not unique information to folks. Most companies have a legal and finance department. And also, it's not timely enough information that people are going to remember it, right?
Yes.
So as a learning and development person, I'm often thinking about, you know, the moment of need, sharing information at the moment of need, remembering, you know, how to sign a legal document, it doesn't matter in your first week. So instead of department overviews, I help people think about the four or five questions that your onboarding program is meant to answer. Mm-hmm. Like, here's how our company makes money, or here's, you know, whatever it is, and then designing your onboarding program to ensure that those questions are answered so that your program can scale as you do, and you're not, or scale up or down, or not finding the right speaker from legal this time. It's just a much easier way to modify your program, I found over time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I would imagine now with the products like Loom, you know, people could be recording the one-time legal overview so people can go and access it when they need it.
Yes. And to have empathy for folks in the seat. I think oftentimes we're like, well, we want to give people a chance to get to know people in different departments, so we'll still have legal come and talk. And so yes, make good time of that synchronous. That synchronous time needs to be, you know, used well. But if you want people to get to know folks in the company, it doesn't have to be here's the legal presentation. It can be here's the story of why I'm here. Here's, you know, my career journey. It's a much more personal connection than a 60-page slide deck. I do want to say one note here, because I do have a lot of, again, empathy for why we do what we do. And I know we're picking on the legal person here, but they might want to share their department overview because they think it makes their life easier. Mm-hmm. If I just tell people, here's how we want you to work with us, they'll remember it, and then poof, like check the box, we're done. It's often not how that works. So there is some education around, I know you care about this, I care about this too for you. Let me share with you the best ways to get people's information and when and where and how, so they'll remember it and bug you less. So.
Yeah, that is interesting, particularly in large organizations where you can't always bump into the same person in that department. You know, when you're calling on an accounting group or an IT group or a legal group, and you just can't build that personal bond.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a fun problem to solve. I love working on onboarding design.
Yeah. So we've talked about offsites, we've talked about onboarding. What are you seeing emerging, Lindsay, in teams that are creating, you know, more periodic events, whether it's a monthly town hall or a weekly toolbox meeting? Are you seeing any particular trends in those modes of getting people kind of engaged and aligned?
Yeah, I do a lot of work on town hall design for companies, and mostly one of the reasons I do that work a lot is it's the most expensive meeting companies tend to have, if you think about employee time. And also, it is viewed as a really big driver for engagement and motivation, because especially if we're all remote or we're not together, it's like the one chance to sort of hear from us. I'd say much of our default is push and one size fits all. So I'm going to give information at people, and it's going to be about anybody. It doesn't matter who's in the room. And that leads to compliance, which in our day and age, I think some people are thinking compliance is enough. It is usually not enough, even if employers have the upper hand. It's really not enough. And if we want engagement, we have to pull people in, give them a role, give them ownership, and we have to do it in a personalized fashion, which means that they think it's about them or see that it's about them. They feel seen by the material and emotionally connected to it. And so no matter what I'm working on, I think about it through that lens. With town halls, we're so steeped in the sit and listen and talk, and you know that it's hard to break out of that routine, especially when folks are sort of looking at information as power or ego or tradition. And you know, so a lot of little tricks I could offer, maybe if you want, I could offer some, but I tend to just sort of give people some small choices that make employees feel like this is relevant to me and that I'm needed here and I want to use this material going forward. That's a lot of my work.
I'd love to hear a few tricks or stories on that, because I think particularly to your point on not just pushing, you know, monolithic information out to everyone, that there must be some cool approaches that make it a little more personalized.
Yeah. So I'll give a couple of tips and tricks. I'll give some that are pull.
Yeah.
And then some that are personalized. And so pull means, again, that we're doing this with employees, not at them. We're giving them a role. They're feeling like they have ownership over the process. So I think a couple tangible ways to do this is, one is to switch your town hall from topics to questions. So here's the questions that we're going to answer, you know, in our agenda. We could take this a step forward, and we can create agendas that don't list the topics, but list the outcomes of those topics. Like, by the time you leave this hour today, here's what you're going to walk away with.
Yeah.
Because truthfully, these are learning programs, right? Like, we want people to be influenced by this, and we have to design it that way. You know, other things I've done with pull is to, you know, give people a role. So, you know, your CEO might say, as you're watching this today, we want you to think of what's one piece of feedback you have for this new product launch. Or we can start with this section or this section. Hey, employees, let's do a poll. What do you want to hear first? Small ways to give people a sense of ownership without changing the content, I think is really the name of the game.
The job to do is interesting, because one of my favorite coaches on speaking said that she always wants you to start with a job to do for the audience to increase engagement. So there seems like there's a commonality there.
Yeah. You know, we didn't talk about this necessarily, but the work I did many, many years ago on screenwriting comes into play here in terms of the job to be done. Television shows and movies have a central question that you're answering. Like, if you watch White Lotus, they're answering who dies in White Lotus, or Severance, they're answering what is Lumen Industries. I mean, there's many questions in Severance, but that's one of them. And you watch to the end because you want to know the answer to that question. So for your town hall, what's the central question that you're answering that day? You know, that it's not meant to trick people, but it's meant to pique curiosity and keep people interested, while also setting the scope for what should be included. Because so much of my work is like, okay, we have 17 million things to get through today. No, if we create a clear desired outcome or effect and or the central question, we have a filter now that helps us know what to put in.
Interesting. All right, I'm going to come back to that, because that sparks some other questions, but I don't want to miss personalized. So let's go to personalized.
Yeah, so personalized versus one size fits all. One size fits all means it's made for anyone. Like, I could be riding the ride at Disneyland, it doesn't matter who's in line, it's the same thing. Whereas personalized, I feel seen. It's, oh, I, you know, you see me and this is made for me, and I'm visible, right? I'm important here. So a couple ways to do personalization. I often tell clients to create an after show. I did this with a company I worked with last year. An after show is something I stole from Bravo and Watch What Happens Live. Andy Cohen is this celebrity television host, and he always does after shows where you watch Real Housewives of Orange County, and then they do an after show and they talk about it more. It's a similar concept where you're kind of going deep on that topic where people come together in smaller groups. So maybe like your recruiting team comes to their own after show and you talk through or get your questions answered in a way that's more relevant to you. You know, so after shows help you personalize the material and make it more relevant to you in your own context. Similarly, giving people a chance to digest or debrief within your town hall. We don't often say like, okay, you know, turn to the person next to you, or we're going to go into breakout groups, or we're going to give you a minute to think. That's really important for people to be able to digest content and use it in their own words. And then the last thing, we may have talked about this with offsites, is this idea of just landing the plane, right? So spending that time, I think we did talk about this, on what are we going to do going forward because of what we learned. It doesn't matter what your event is. These are all really important things to do. And lastly, I'll say some of this can be solved by the way you communicate your event. Mm-hmm. So in your pre-comms or pre-communication for your town hall, instead of just saying, hey, here's what we're going to talk about, I want to know, why do you want me there? What's the role that I'm playing? And why are we having this event? And it just takes a little bit of more time, maybe another minute, for someone to craft that email. But it goes a long way towards getting people to want to come versus like, this is a mandatory event.
Yeah, I like that a lot, particularly with meetings now that are kind of bimodal. You can turn up for the live event or just catch up on the video later. You kind of have to recruit and encourage people to participate for the live session more now than before.
Yeah, I think we're used to many of these being very passive. And, you know, again, it's the default, but it doesn't need to be that way.
Yeah, that's neat. One of my favorite authors and friends, Maggie Jackson, wrote the book Uncertain. And she was talking to me the other day about how as humans, we tend to feel that certain is strong and uncertain is weak. So finding ways to create a way to build space between the question and the answer, as she puts it, is really valuable, both individually and as a team. So, you know, like your example of, hey, let's all take a couple of minutes to think on that and turn to a neighbor and ask a question about what's landing with you or not landing with you, is actually really good in terms of building muscle for the team to embrace uncertainty and actually what is possible if you don't just take what's told to you as complete.
I love that. I think there's many ways, sometimes small and large, that signal to an employee what we feel about them and if we value them. And when we just turn over the reins to them for a minute or two in these events, it has a really big effect. Again, with the caveat here, we want to tell people why we're doing that. So why am I having you debrief? Okay, why am I having you digest? Because we find, you know, tell them the why. Again, a very important step that I don't want people to skip.
Yeah. And I would also imagine, particularly for the introverts, as you touched on earlier, you don't want to put anyone on the spot to come up with a response in one of those moments either.
No, you want to give them a longer runway so they have time to prepare. It's just the kind thing to do.
Yeah. I know one of the things one of my team's great at doing is they'll say, hey, if anyone has a question that they're not wanting to ask or a statement they want to share, feel free to send it on Teams or on text to a buddy and that person can speak for you. And I find that that actually brings out a bit more voice from people who aren't the natural people to step up and talk in those moments.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there's a whole rabbit hole we could go down about asking questions. And why people don't ask questions and how to get them to ask more questions. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. We may come back to that rabbit hole, but one question that I wanted to come back to on your central question, you shared about like the central question of White Lotus, like who dies next or whatever. How much does a central question either reinforce or align with purpose in a team? Like, can you use that central question concept in a similar way to bring purpose to bear in, you know, different circles, different ways?
Interesting. I mean, what I'm imagining as you ask that is, again, this way of getting at motivation and what we're driving towards and what we care about and why we're here. Yeah, I think I hadn't thought about that. I think that's really interesting. connecting things to the greater why is super important. I don't see the central question as necessarily like a purpose statement, more as a framing device,
yeah,
I would say.
I think that's maybe where I'm leaning a bit more too. Because when you said it, I was like, that's interesting. Because if my purpose is here, maybe a central question helps us check in like episodically, like going back to the TV show. Hey, how are we serving the purpose in this episode or in this quarter or through this project?
Yeah, it sets expectations for people, right? It just helps orient the brain to what we're doing and why we're here. It just so much of what I see in these initiatives are not very brain friendly because we're not taught like the learning science. And, you know, obviously many of us are not taught that, but it is a big reason why this investment fails.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like stealing tricks from my previous life when I can.
That's super neat. Well, time has flown by. I wanted to dive into the art of questions, but that might be a second podcast for us.
That is, yeah, a lot. Big topic.
Big topic. There was some awesome stuff that we've touched on. I really appreciate, Lindsay, your structure to really engaging and moving people, you know, asking the questions around the outcome, explaining the why, you know, engaging some people for some focus groups or potential champions. I thought all of that really lands tightly from my experience of things that have gone well and not so well in life. So thank you for creating that roadmap. I thought the way you touched on forced fun as well, and hey, these are adults, you know, is really important. There's probably a number of listeners that are going to be running to events in this next 60 to 90 days that might want to just rethink that.
Yeah, it's a pet peeve of mine for sure.
Yeah. And particularly when it came to onboarding, I enjoyed that kind of reference to be careful of the departmental overviews and be careful of overload. Think more about what's going to elicit that feeling of engagement and design for the emotions and not be compliance driven. I think that's a big one, and onboarding is so important in so many of our teams.
Well, there's two things I want to say that I notice what you're doing is you're actually landing the plane for this podcast, right? You're like, here's what I'm taking away. Here's my reflection. I love that. So bravo for doing that. And also it helps orient the listener, probably helps you. We can do more of that in any of these kinds of conversations or events. It also makes me feel good because I feel like, oh yeah, it resonated. So many reasons why this is a powerful thing. And I do want to say, again, going back to the, you know, the empathy piece about why we do what we do and, you know, why this might be so hard is all the things that I'm sharing today, I hope are small changes, big effects. That's my bread and butter. But that we recognize that without this, we're not going to be as impactful. Our programs are not going to be as successful. We're going to spend more money and have to sort of do the change again or the offsite again. And so this is why this is really important is we don't want the compliance to tell people again and again and again. We want them to do it on their own, which means designing it with that intention in mind. So that's the larger why behind all these strategies.
I love that. And that why resonates with that other statement you made earlier, which is these can be the most expensive meetings we have in our businesses. So
yes.
For any of our listeners out there that are sitting there, maybe feeling a bit tight in the chest now, but they want to take some of this action and design, how do they best find you and the Gathering Effect?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You can find me at my website, which is gatheringeffect.com. I actually have a calculator on my website where you can do some scary math and see the potential cost of your gatherings, which,
brilliant.
You know, maybe take a breath before you do that. So yeah, people can find me there, and I'd love to connect and chat with folks.
Awesome. Well, Lindsay, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I've certainly taken away some good approaches for the future. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time.